Weissman University.
So, welcome everyone to Startup Show Podcast. Now we have Leho, and am I pronouncing it correctly?
That's right, Leho. Well done.
Very glad to meet you, and it's so cool talking to you downstairs. And by the way, we're in Freight office, we're in Finland, not the usual Startup Shook setting, but Startup Shook goes to Finland. This is the Finland edition, Finnish setting. So I'd love to learn more about you personally, because we've been talking about your startups and we obviously will go into there as well.
Yeah.
I'd love to also make an introduction about myself so that I can understand each other. And I would also share my first experience with the conflict that I had,
and I want to learn from you as well, from your first co-founder conflict. I found this is a very common problem.
But yeah, I'd love to hear more about you and where you grew up, what motivated you to go into startups, and
yeah, your story, huh? Yeah. Where do I even start? I'm South Korean. I mentioned before, I grew up largely between Los Angeles and Seoul in the States. I'd say really I think for as long as I had it in me, I was, I had an entrepreneurial bone. I think it was mainly just family upbringing and a few other things. My parents are quite entrepreneurial as well. And then I think for me, it was just, when I was really young, always just kind of getting pretty scrappy with different ideas or in small different ways. For example, when I was a kid in primary school, my parents wouldn't really have too much time to pack me lunch because they're just working a lot. I guess my mom would just give me a little bit of lunch money. And so I would, for example, even go around and just buy other kids' lunches and things like that, and then trade this for that, this meal for that meal. And I feel it was always just you have an end objective. See, how do you kind of get there with what you have, right?
Yeah.
I find that's really just the ethos of entrepreneurship.
Yeah.
And so I think, it was kind of cultivated at an early age. And then I started to I would say a lot of the more tech and software entrepreneurship happened when I was in university, just really late nights, just hacking with friends. And we would just build all sorts of really stupid shit, right? A music playlist aggregator, really, really silly ideas. And then I think it just kind of snowballed from there, into the different startups that I've built.
That's pretty cool. I think a lot of people can really relate to that. I've been selling Hopeworks when I was in middle school.
Exactly.
Because my friend was quite smart, so I monetized his intelligence. We built this website and just sold his homework to a bunch of people.
That's
because the school don't want people to pay money to each other. So you made these coupons.
Yeah.
And via code, you enter the website and you get the PDF, and that was fun. We almost kicked out, but it was worth it.
That's me.
But that was very fun. And I guess that's a lot of the ethos of entrepreneurship, and I agree a lot. It's just getting to where you want in figuring out a way despite constraints and challenges.
Exactly. So
what was your first venture and what motivated you to make that?
My first venture, I would say maybe my more substantive venture was the a data annotation tool. It's a company called Ncord. Started, it was just called Cord back in the day. But I think the idea really just spurred about from, we were in this incubator. I met two co-founders, and both, it's just actually started with myself and one other co-founder at first. But I think we both respectively felt this pain point. From times that we were doing more AI research, and it was just models at that time weren't performant enough because people would maybe want to train slightly more customized models on top of some base model, but they maybe didn't have enough data, and And then, you know, they had maybe like data in the form of like unannotated, unstructured, you know, like less, I wouldn't say like, yeah, less structured data. And we started off by annotating actually videos, right? And so we have like a really interesting way to, you know, because a video, if you think about it, it has such a dense amount of like data in it, you know, each frame. Yep. Nowadays is like, you can get like 120 frames per second, right? So it's like 120 frames every single second. And so what we decided to do was like we had this like few shot annotation technique that would then propagate like annotations and throughout the entire video so that people can use like the entire video set as like training data. Yeah, that was sort of, that was the first venture. It's still going on today. You know, we've raised like a few rounds, you know, a couple hundred employees.
That's super cool. It's very similar to, well, I didn't actually go in that route, but the company I'm working right now in Freight, we had a plan where all this defense information, a lot of it is also video.
Yeah. What if we can take the video information of human doing human things?
Yeah.
And use that to train humanoid robots. So actually the application was not defense at all, but in, for example, in industry, in factories, have factory cameras recording people for safety, but people are doing things like manufacturing cars one day, which will be replaced perhaps by machines. That data can be used, reverse engineered, and inverse kinematics, make a model that can train humanoid robots to do the job. But we did not go in that route, but it's very interesting to see like people doing a lot of data annotation for videos.
Yeah, exactly. It started, I mean, just even, because this was now if almost 6-7 years ago. But you know, back then AI models were a lot more nascent than they are now.
Yeah.
And like state of the art models, neural architectures were like ResNet and VGG and things like that, and they would just need like quite a lot of data to jam into them to train. So yeah, that was kind of based off of that PCS, like even simple classification, object detection.
Yeah, and moving on, you're building something new right now. You want to tell us something about it?
I mean, what I'm building right now, it's, you know, I think I've had like a bit of a journey. And it's gone through, let's just say, highs and lows. And, you know, like I've gone primarily down the venture scale path before, but now I would say it's been mainly kind of like a lot of bootstrapped ideas. Funny enough, right now, what I'm working on has, on the outset, might seem like it has no bearing to the previous startups that I've built in the past. Yeah, and it's actually really just supporting, I would say, a lot of what I've been sort of like trying to develop in terms of maybe the things outside of my previous experiences. So, you know, I think I talked about of startup building, but, you know, I said that I've been doing a lot of angel investing for quite some time.
Yeah.
And so, you know, for the longest time, I was thinking about maybe what I could build that would actually complement that, and wouldn't really be so much of a sort of a massive venture scale idea. And I was thinking, okay, well, where can you also really leverage, AI tailwinds? Speaking to quite a lot of my different colleagues from YC, and then I was inspired by this idea of building like a full stack company, right? And so the idea is like, rather than building software for some kind of end service provider, where can you just leverage AI and be a service provider yourself? All of that in conjunction with the, you know, the angel investing stuff that I'm doing. One of the things that I've actually been doing over the years on the angel investing side is I've been investing in a lot of talented European founders. You know, a lot of them actually want to have maybe like a short-term, medium-term, long-term stint in the US to just kind of see what it's like to go to San Francisco, to maybe go to New York and build for a little bit out of these ecosystems. And so in that process, I've noticed actually one super big pain point that they've had is just logistical. Like, how do they actually make it over to the U.S.? And so, funny enough, we're actually just building an immigration services firm.
I wouldn't need that. I know a lot of people who use that.
Yeah. So a lot of it is just largely powered by AI behind the scenes to drive down a lot of the costs, for them, what we can charge different entrepreneurs. But yeah, we help people sponsor different talent visas. Of course, you know, there's a slightly selfish intention, which is, hey, also for me, it's, you know, there's a bit of like a deal flow component mechanism to it and just kind of spotting.
That's smart.
Spotting like very talented young founders, and then, you know, making their dreams into reality, which is just bringing them over to the U.S. if they wanted it, you know, experience.
Hey, that's fair. Two birds in one stone, eh?
Exactly.
That's perfect. But in your experience, like, what's the biggest, I guess, challenge for people moving to the U.S.? Is it the visa? Is it other logistical challenges, like place?
Yeah. I mean, it's usually that. It's just, you know, I think when you're moving anywhere, you just have to think about, like, there are a few things that are always like tricky universally, like finding community. And then all the logistical crap that just kind of comes with it, right? And it's such a silly thing because you think that the logistical crap, you know, maybe it shouldn't be such a headache. Ideally, just be able to like pick up your bags and go, right?
Especially with the U.S.
Exactly. Especially with the U.S. So there's a lot of people to file on these petitions. Like, you can be like over 1,000 pages.
Yeah, actually.
And so imagine like you're a company builder just trying to focus on the core product. And then, you know, you see the U.S. as maybe a market to sell into or tap into as like some kind of a necessity. And then, you know, you're bottlenecked by having to fill out this thing that is over 1,000 pages. How much time that takes you and drives you away from your company. Usually we find it's that, right? At the point in which somebody knows, like, hey, this is very necessary for my company to sell into the U.S. or just to build a U.S. community, a U.S. presence. It's usually all the kind of logistical things, structure in your entity. Like finding a way to go by yourself, like how you could stay there for, you know, more than like a couple months at a time. Yeah.
Is Delaware still a popular option for cohort rating?
Delaware, I would say Delaware is the most mainstream for a C Corp. If you have like an LLC, Wyoming is pretty popular. Wyoming too, yeah. Wyoming for no corporate, yeah, no fail corporate taxes. Okay. No state corporate taxes. Wyoming, Delaware. Those are two main options.
I've never heard of Wyoming, so that's something I learned. I know there's a lot of companies like Firstbase.io that like help people set up C Corps in Delaware.
Yeah.
But Wyoming, yeah.
Firstbase also gives you an option now to
doing like Wyoming, yeah. We're a cities in the US, do you think it's like actually starting out to be quite competitive? Like SF and New York is too popular. It's very popular. It's very good.
Yeah.
But I guess people are starting to branch out of like, I hear Florida, I hear about Texas.
Yeah.
Ohio, in fact, sometimes.
Yeah. I think it depends on the venture ecosystems and what you're building. But I would say for a lot of consumer, maybe media, things like that, LA is a pretty good option. Same for New York, like a lot of consumer, maybe fintech as well. I would say New York is a very good ecosystem. Of course, like, you know, your more traditional VP SaaS, a lot of your AI plays in San Francisco. I've heard of like Austin, you're right, Texas being a scene for some startups. I don't know what sort of big companies have been coming out of there, what industries, but that I've heard is an option. Denver, I've heard as well. Yeah, Denver, like Colorado. Like you said, Miami, a lot of maybe crypto guys have been around Miami. So it's like really, yeah, I think, depending on the industry. Oh, Seattle is another very, very good one. For AI, a lot of B2B SaaS, because a lot of the sort of like FANG, mega tech corporations are based out of there. So Seattle is another very good option.
No wonder the residency also have like an option to pick a thing with Vancouver, Canada. Yeah, as an area to
build your company. Toronto and Montreal also have very big ecosystems as well.
Uh-huh.
So like really good institutions up in universities that spurred out like a tech harness. So,
yeah. Cool. So to break the fourth wall, usually when I do podcasts, I like to go through the founders' like history and then talk about like their current company and then talking then about like advice for like next founders.
Yeah.
But then as I just become more chill with like the process of talking to people and just going with the flow and also talking to a lot of people here, I find talking about philosophy and like what they think about the future is very, very interesting.
Mm.
I will give it to your choice. We can talk about you, which obviously there's a lot of stuff we can unpack here, that experience, your, I think, you know, your ventures in the past that we skipped on, or your latest company and your experience dealing with co-founder conflict and obviously the other entrepreneurial experiences you have.
Yeah.
Or we can also talk about the a bit more theoretical, a bit more fancy schmancy, talking future 10 years. What do you think humanity is like? Yeah, that's also fun.
Yeah. I mean, I like theoretical stuff. You know, that to me is like, it's always fun to philosophize on that, especially we're at like a pretty interesting time. We can do that. You know, if you still have more like thoughts or questions, like we can kind of blend the two in between. But, you know, even for yourself, I'm kind of curious because, you know, you're working on defense tech. So I think, you know, you probably have like some idea of where that'll go in like 5 or 10 years and what the industry looks like and what warfare, like modern, like, you know, like futuristic warfare looks like. So, yeah.
Yeah, I'd love to go to philosophy. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm glad you're on board.
Yeah.
And I can, I guess, get a bit of an introduction about myself.
Yeah.
We haven't gone into a proper introduction downstairs when we had a coffee chat.
Yeah.
But, so I'm Deo. I grew up in Indonesia, Chinese family, Chinese immigrant parents, and I studied in Israel for 6 years. I wanted to go into defense at a young age because I was born during the time of a revolt and my dad had to guard the home with a machete. And so yeah, the chaos was like in my middle name and I wanted to make the world a safer place. And when I went, it was a time to pick a university. I thought, hey, a lot of my friends are in America. A lot of my friends are in Europe and also these good universities in Asia, like KAIST in Korea is very good. There's Singapore and TU. But I thought, hey, let's do something that people have never done before. And so where in the world can I study defense? But it's so unique. And Israel is like an option. Obviously, it's not the popular option for Indonesians. The country doesn't have diplomatic ties. And I'm not very political, but we can all agree that they have a very good like startup scene and they're very good at defense. And so I was pondering about it. And you know what? Let's give it a shot. Let's apply. And it was not easy. I had to convince the embassy in Singapore because there's no embassy in Indonesia. I had to convince the Singaporeans that I can come there, in fact. And I must convince the people in the university that, hey, yes, I will find a way I can come there. And so it's like playing double chicken and egg problem. Playing two sides. So eventually when I got accepted and managed the visa to come there, I was, I think, the first ever from Indonesia to study in that university. I studied at Technion. It's like a very old university, even older than the state itself. And it's been pretty cool. I lived through three wars. Like Israel is a chaotic place. Even the people in there have like mixed views about their own like country.
Yeah.
But it's a very interesting place. The people are very, very charming. The people are very, I think the one thing I learned about them is their persistence. You know, they go through a lot and they just keep working. Like during the war, there's like literal rockets upstairs.
Yeah.
Not upstairs, like in the sky. We would go downstairs to the bunkers and keep working. Like these people from Microsoft and PayPal and all these companies, they really keep working. It's so funny to see. But and also admirable. So I realized, hey, you know, there's a lot of mess in this world. How can we improve it? And, you know, being someone from Indonesia, I have family members who are also Muslim. I want to understand like the whole picture. So I went to Palestine actually and I lived there for a bit. And the people are amazing. I mean, they welcome me to their home like their own family.
Yeah.
Give me chai. We eat mansaf together on those like amazing Persian rugs. And, like we eat with our hands. It's amazing. It's so fun.
Yeah.
Delicious. They're just the best people. So kind. And I realized, you know, in the end, the world, people are people and people want peace. And I've also have friends from Ukraine, friends from Russia. In fact, my first ever roommate, room situation in Israel was like a Russian and a Ukrainian in the same building. You know, it's so funny to see them interact and they're interacting as people. because people are people and people want peace. And what I realized is that war is never going to end, because as long as there are humans, we will always have conflict. And my mission in life from then on, seeing like a lot of my friends who unfortunately passed away, like from both sides during the conflicts, I realized, hey, I want to make the world a better place. I'd rather have drone fleets falling than lives fleeting. And so conflict will always happen. So I want to make conflict more efficient and precise. Like I'd rather have two persons like arguing constructively than throwing glass bottles at each other. That's what I mean with making conflict more efficient and precise and reduce collateral damage. So that's been my last 6 years. Then I'm here right now in Finland because of the program, not because of Finland itself. Finland is a cool place, great sauna, but the program is amazing and I get to build my project with amazing people and meet cool people like you.
Yeah.
Here I am.
That's cool. So how long ago did you leave Israel?
I left for this program. It starts in June, so not so long, like a month and a half.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I'm here for a month and a half. I think we're going to be here until end of August.
Yeah.
And yeah.
And is the plan back to Israel?
The plan is to, I think, build the technology, prove it perhaps in a testing ground where people can make use of it in Ukraine or within the US. And my mission, I guess I can make the most impact in the US.
Okay.
Because Ingress is involved in a lot of conflict. If they can distribute the proper tools and
Okay.
So that's what's my issue.
Yeah. Okay. So over to the, defense sector, I feel like is very, very big in the US also.
Yeah.
With this war. So
yeah,
it's cool. That's it.
And I'd love to hear from you. Like, what's your, perspective on the future of technology, for example, and maybe I can like start, my goal in life, like long term, is like to explore the universe. I think we're gonna solve death quite soon.
Yeah.
And if that happens, it will be very interesting how things just change from 0 to 1.
Yeah.
People can live forever. They can do more research in their life. Progress will be like very much exponential because we have infinite time now.
Yeah.
And if we can explore the universe, augment ourselves into better human computer hybrid / elevated hardware as well. We can have like bulletproof and fireproof skin, commune in the fire pits of the moons of your Jupiter and like sleek in the gases of, I don't know, Uranus or whatever.
Yeah.
Just commune with the universe and understand it better. And that's my life mission. And so I think if we can reach there after death itself, it will be amazing.
Yeah.
But that's, of course, like borderline science fiction, but it's nice to have something in your head to keep you seeing more than what's in your everyday. Yeah.
I think that's like really interesting points, because I mean, for me, I think I see both an optimistic path and a pessimistic path, right? Of course, like, I think on one end, I see like a lot of this innovation being used to, like you were saying, just might benefit humanity in this broader sense that we live longer. We're able to just be much more productive or efficient. We're able to like push boundaries, explore new horizons, kind of do, a lot of space travel. That's on one end. And I think for me though, I always am also thinking about like for all the optimistic sides.
Yeah.
There's the pessimistic side. There's always two sides. And it's funny actually, like one of my favorite books is this is actually the very last book that Stephen Hawking published before he passed. It's called Brief Answers, The Big Questions. And whether you do find the time to read or don't, I always like try to push this book onto a lot of people, because I think in this book he talks about he answers like a lot of big questions, because he gives a very, very succinct brief answer to them. But one of them is just like, how do we think humanity will end? Is there an end to humanity? And actually, like, some of the things that he states is like a possible end to humanity are like very, very interesting. AI, it's just one of them. And so I think right now, I see that, like, that combined with, like, you know, Nipashans, like, super intelligence, it just kind of makes you think. I think that there's sort of like this duty as we start to build out a lot more AI technologies of, just frankly speaking, just being a bit more like exercising, like AI ethics and emphasizing that. I say that, and then, you know, here I am also just building away with AI and not really considering like too many of the implications over here. Because I see this as like sort of, like a race with everybody else.
That's a thing, right? It's like a force beyond ourselves sometimes.
Exactly. And it's exactly that. And I find that's the danger, because it is a force beyond ourselves. And all of us are just kind of like racing in every single domain to just incorporate AI. My consequences are usually an afterthought. And so I can't help but think of like very, very negative outcomes, like due to that sort of pattern. As much as I do see like a lot of the benefits coming out of it as well. Maybe I should have like a more positive outlook on this. But that's tough. Maybe because of the way that I'm primed to think, but also maybe just because of, I just feel like it's a topic that people aren't taught enough about, or is like receiving enough attention.
And so we need definitely those perspective as well, because if you just keep pushing without having any breaks, you know, it's not good. And the thing with technology is that people always build things not because they need it for something, but because they fucking can.
Yeah.
And that's a problem, right?
Yeah, that is true.
Like, when I used to like to hack things around when I was a kid.
Yeah.
And sometimes things would explode in my room and stuff would shatter. And my mom would be scolding me and my dad, right?
Yeah.
But I don't think that through. And I think humanity, despite how experienced and how long we have existed, I think we're still quite young in terms of like how in the cosmic scale, like how mature we are.
Yeah.
We're still building dangerous stuff just for the sake of it.
Yeah.
And so long as this innovation is possible, people just keep going at it. And once that force is set, the momentum is started, the race just starts. Everybody just keeps going and there's no stop.
Absolutely. I think it's that. It's like, and oftentimes, I mean, we're primed to like not constantly think of the bigger picture. And so like even different ventures that I've started in the past, I think when I think about the decisions that went into like starting these startups, it wasn't like it was really, hey, like, man, I want to build something. Like I knew I wanted to be an entrepreneur. Right. And so we start with like these high level, like very, very broad premises. Like, I want to be a startup entrepreneur. I want to build an AI, but then I'm going to fill in the blanks of exactly what that is afterwards. Right. Or maybe, I don't know, for yourself, like, I want to build in defense tech. I have like these principles, but the specificities, I think, sometimes can get a little lost. Right. And so, like, at least for me, I could easily see that sort of thought pattern of like, hey, I want to build something in AI. I want to be a startup founder. I, you know, have this background and experience, and what can I do with that? I can easily see that going from like a data annotation tool to something else, right? And that's something else, I guess, if we're speaking in like a theoretical sense, you know, if we just see like positive impact and negative impact, if we just see this kind of like on a linear scale, maybe, well, I was somewhere like the more positive impact, but you could easily see it going the other way around, right? Unintentionally. That's kind of how I think of it.
So that raises a point, though. I want to hear your perspective on like if you think about fate, or if you think about how much we have agency over like our decisions, because we have all these forces. Like, I'm born during the time of the internet rush,
yeah,
like in the thousands, and then right now we have the AI rush,
yeah,
and so I'm like in the right time to be pushed by it, to build stuff in it,
yeah,
even though maybe I didn't have desires to do that,
yeah,
but because everyone around me is doing that,
yeah,
and so that's what I will be doing. because there's like no other option. All my friends are doing it. If I go to work, my company will be implementing stuff in it. They will ask me to work on something in that field. And so in this world, do you really can't choose like what you want to work on? You're just born into that era and that time where you are supposed to build something and you have no other choice.
Totally. Yeah. I mean, it's a really interesting thought. Like when you ask this question about urgency, I mean, I'm curious to hear like more thoughts on your end from that. I guess I kind of have like a glimpse of what your answer is, but for me, I also agree with you. I don't really think we have too much agency, frankly speaking.
Yeah.
Like at the end of the day, you have micro agency around decisions. I can pick up this cup of water and I could tell myself like, I'm thirsty, so I want a drink right now. But then at the end of the day, you're right. Like it's a force that's greater than ourselves. We're born into a particular era. There's certain things that are in vogue. We're raised in a particular context, right? And then especially, maybe you can say like in the beginning, there's like some agency, but actually not really, right? Our parents are kind of maybe pushing us into a particular direction, or all the influences around us are pushing us into a particular direction. And as you get older and older, you kind of just get codified more and more and more into like a particular path. And then I think like more exogenously, like there are certain trends that are just kind of happening in the world that within, you know, whatever kind of context you live in, right? And in the venture sphere right now, like AI is in vogue, right? And so a lot of capital available is just kind of going towards AI. And so, of course, there are like massive tailwinds to kind of building an AI. But at the same time, if I told myself, like, I want to go build a marketplace, right? Like naturally, the world has kind of moved on from, you know, depending on the angle of a marketplace, like from these kinds of ideas. And so like that in itself is like you can argue like it's sort of a loss of agency. And like I feel like, you know, you have like maybe like a few more examples of where like, you know, you have more and more of these constraints placed on you. And then I would say exactly, like in my view, maybe we don't see it as sort of like a discrete binary thing, but if we see it on a sort of like a more sort of continuous scale, like I just think we have like very little agency.
Yeah.
Yeah. To do like, yeah. Whatever agency is defined as, I find a very little agency.
I guess it's not the nicest answer, but that's the truth, man. There's the hard fact about the world. And I do agree with that because do you know the movie Tenet by Christopher Nolan?
No. But
so it discusses also like the fact that a lot of our decisions are just environmental factors.
Yeah.
Environmental parameters, and we're just reacting. So you can make the small decisions, but in the big bold lines, it's pretty much set.
Yeah.
So my question to you is, how do we pick the right path towards humanity lasting the longest as possible, man? And maybe the more correct question is, how do we pick if we cannot pick at all in the smaller scale, like as persons? Well, like humanity is like this bigger force that like it has its own mind, this hive mind of humanity.
Yeah,
it wants to go a certain direction. The small people cannot make a decision.
Yeah, I mean, maybe this is like a very, very bleak outlook, and maybe it doesn't fully answer your question. But so I guess you asked how can we pick decisions to kind of propel humanity forward, and then you know maybe. Or like, how do we pick? And then the other question was like, how do we pick, you know, in general? Well, I find this is like, how do we pick things that will like further humanity? I mean, I just find that, like, things I don't know, and maybe this is like a cop out answer, but I find that like if your views are not already aligned with directionally the way that things are going, and exactly, and I feel like it's like, okay, I guess let me give an example. Okay, I feel like there are times where you have had like very, very contrarian ideas, that had then ended up maybe breaking the mold and have then set humanity into like a different course. But I would just argue that like that is not a true breakthrough. Maybe in some way, it's just sort of like what other people, because at the end of the day, it does need buy-in. And at the end of the day, maybe this is just something that was more of an unlock and people wanted to actually directionally go through sort of like this breakthrough path, right? Like as an example, you know, let's just say like Martin Luther and Reformation, right? And like things were heavily like religious at this time. And then, okay, maybe like people weren't really down with like certain ideologies of the church, like in the 13th century around like, okay, so Martin Luther comes along and then there's Reformation, right? But then at the end of the day, like that needed buy-in, right? From like society. And then I feel like this was just like revealing underlying thoughts that people had. A lot of these breakthroughs, even in technology, right? I find like are at the end of the day, like you still do need societal buy-in. And in that sense, maybe that's the sort of greater force that sucks out agency. And so, you know, I feel like the way that you make decisions, you know, the easiest way would just be, you know, you have all these signals of what would like of what society would want, and you kind of just like push down that direction.
Yeah.
And then maybe in some way you can find success, right?
Yeah.
Because okay, society is telling us to build AI right now, and AI like seems to be in vogue, so I'm just going to build AI. You could, I guess, like go against the noise and still build something that maybe you feel like will have some societal acceptance, but it's a much lower chance of success. And so I think it really just depends on like what you're optimizing for. Sorry to kind of give like a super, super long answer.
No. I guess I'm just kind of thinking about
this. That's your very good answer, right? Because I'm getting a lot of ideas from this.
Like, I think I'm just, yeah, thinking about like the answer to your question, you know, sort of like in real time.
But I think that's kind of how I would form it, right? Is like at the end of the day, I feel like society, generally, there's like some consensus of like what people would want or not want. And then, you know, you have signals based off of like the kind of present moment in time. And you can decide to like use those signals to do the highest percent chance thing that you think society would want.
Exactly.
Or you could kind of like, you might have like a lower percent chance, but then society might still want it. And like, that's where like a deviation on the outset might happen.
Exactly.
But yeah, at the end of the day, like, you know, I think just picking something would have to do with then just like what you would want and whether you think you want to make something like
hard for yourself or easier for yourself.
Exactly. That societal buy-in is a very powerful idea because it puts this image in my mind. Imagine we're cells in a human body.
Yeah.
Like, what is your interest? Do you want to live as a cell the longest possible, or you want the human, the bigger entity, to live longest as possible? What interest should you hold? Like your interest as the cell, as a human, or humanity, the person? So if I want to live the longest as a cell, if I want to be the most successful as a person, then I'll have to ride these waves that society have already decided on, and we just have to ride the wave.
Yeah.
Like this MLK is already societally... they have already a consensus. They want to move on from this older ideology to newer ideology.
Yeah.
He's just a keyhole opener.
Yeah.
Unlocks this and let it all out. But society is already moving in that direction. He just sensed it. And
exactly.
He is in part by it and he used it, right? That's what you said.
Yeah.
And so as a person, how do we learn from this? Should we just take this waves and ride it and be more successful for ourselves or for humanity? But the question is, should you have your interest for humanity, like by sacrificing your own interest, and then in the end you fail anyway because society doesn't have that consensus? And there's this scary thought in my mind, what if, you know, for all these people who want to make humanity last the longest by preventing all these threats to our existence, like nuclear, like AI, AGI, what if we're not in the period of human civilization to see that? Like, what if, because society dies and revives again and again and again, we don't know, like before all these Egyptians, if there are already like very super high tech society before us that failed, right? We don't know. Like, and maybe in the future after us, after we perhaps collapse, there will be more societies and human civilizations after us. What if we're not in the timeline where human learns
how to fix those mistakes, like nuclear and AGI.
Yeah.
And we must learn from our mistakes, and we must like destroy ourselves first.
Yeah.
Before we revive again.
Yeah.
And so like the best thing to do now is not to try to keep humans from destroying themselves, like stopping the kid from falling from the bike.
Yeah.
But to live your best as the cell and the body to your do your job and just to sense where society is going.
Yeah. Which is kind of a bleak or a positive outlook depending on how you look at it, but that's kind of how I now see it, right? Is like if you just feel like there's this force greater than yourself and there's so little things that you can do, you might as well just try to like optimize within like all the constraints that are placed on you and then just like kind of live your life and then you know I wouldn't say like do your duty, but I would say really just like within the amount of agency that you have, just try to exercise that, but just know kind of at the end of the day, there's a greater force that's sort of pushing you around.
Yeah.
It's funny because, kind of going back to this, like the Stephen Hawking book, like there's, you know, one of the brief, like the big questions is like, is there life after death? And his answer was pretty much just like, no. And it was
no full stop,
no full stop passage. But a little more nuanced, but I think at the end of the day, it kind of comes down to like a similar thing, which is like, hey, if you know that the world will be moving on without you and you're just gone at the end of the day, what do you do with the time that you have? And then I guess if you also believe that the world is moving and you don't have like, you have like a constrained amount of agency in the world, which you do. I think it's just that it's like, hey, try to make your own meaning, within sort of like the confines that you have. And, even if you don't fully have agency, right? Try to live like in a way, at least for me, I try to just live in a way where I feel like I have some fulfillment, you know, like maximum fulfillment, even if that doesn't, you know, even if fulfillment is not necessarily agency. How can I just enjoy presently, like what I'm doing on day to day? How can I just enjoy my life without maybe kind of like feeling like it's just time to waste back at 10 days? What did I do?
Yeah. That's a beautiful like life.
Yeah.
Life, like cool. Instead of pretending you're the mayor of the universe and trying to keep humanity alive for the longest possible time, how do I make this person that I am right now, in front of the mirror, have the best story and best impact with whatever resources I have, given to.
Exactly. That's how are we? Yeah. And then not to get like, yeah, frankly speaking, I think as entrepreneurs, sometimes we get like super, super, super caught up in all this, which I think is actually good. Maybe, you know, you definitely like, I don't want to discourage anyone for being a visionary because there should be a visionary. But yeah, I think it's that maybe if there's anything to learn, maybe there are like lessons to kind of take on both sides.
Yeah.
Yeah. Of that perspective.
We always need more perspectives than all these very, Elon Musk type person.
Yeah.
Wants to conquer the universe, expand humanity. We also, I think the second type of founders that I see is like the monk type of founders who are focusing more on optimizing what we have right now.
Yeah.
Fixing Earth, fixing what we have, fulfillment, jobs for the future when AGI comes in, how we get people employed and all that.
Yeah. So exactly. It's sort of like, I mean, for me, exactly. Like, I think there are things that like, and it's kind of like I said, right? It's like, if you believe that the world is headed directionally in a certain place, you know, there are people that can make decisions, you can pick decisions, and there are people that pick decisions that are like maybe higher percentages, so it'd be safer. And then, you know, there are people that kind of veer off. And then once again, this is probably what society would actually want, but it's just lower percentages from all the signals that we get. And so for me, right, like if we then kind of take that into like a tangible thing,
yeah,
like tangible, tangible sort of actions, like, what I've done is like this entire sort of
visa processing thing. Well, for me, it's just a high percentage signal. I know that this is a pain in the ass for people.
Yeah.
They just need it. Right. And I'm not going to go like too far out of my way to then maybe build a venture that I feel like societally might not be accepted. There are these systems in place. How can I just like get past these systems using this interesting technology that'll just make everyone's lives easier? Boom, done.
High percentage. So I have two questions from there. No.
Yeah.
Because you raised a good point about reading the signals. And I have an interesting like way of thinking about it that I can share, but I want to ask first the question. What do you think about people who are placed in industries that you don't really agree with, but that's like, they're doing completely what you're doing, yeah, but they're just placed in a different environment and just must like conform to the, not conform in like a losing manner, but like they have to ride that wave, not like this wave you're riding. Is that maybe that wave is against your wave and against your principles and your morals and your ideologies.
Yeah.
He's just doing what he's supposed to do, trying to do, fulfilling his life, making the best for his community. But
yeah, it's an interesting question. I actually think maybe then this kind of goes down to the definition of what you might believe society to be, because I believe that multiple societies can just exist in like a single, like in a space at a given point in time. And so I guess, you know, in that sense, I would say, you know, even though it might be contradicting like the society that I'm operating in, maybe it's still benefiting the society that he's operating in insofar as that, like he can still kind of push maybe that society forward and you know, and like it's maybe, for example, and then at a certain point, maybe in which like you do have this arena in which two societies cannot operate, then I find that like both societies might collapse into a single society that might just have like more buy-in. Maybe like it's conflict, like all the wars,
or there's conflict.
Yeah. Or like the way that I'm thinking about this in my head is like, maybe you have, for example, like the Web3 community versus, you know, like traditional finance, like DeFi versus traditional finance.
Yeah.
And like, I don't know, like maybe you kind of see one might collapse into the other. You might find like a failure, one entire system because it doesn't have this like consensus societal buy-in from like both communities. Right. And so, yeah, this is like one example, but both are kind of operating in their two societal domains at the moment. And then, you know, like there's this weird kind of convergence trying to happen. And then let's just see like which one wins out.
Yeah, I think we need that dynamic. I disagree with Nicole, who thinks the world, everyone has to like conform to one ideology or
yeah,
have the same mode of operating. Because just like in the brain, we have different ideas. We have different thoughts that battle each other.
Yeah.
Every time we think.
Yeah.
It happens all the time. So I think physically in the world, it happens as conflict.
Yeah.
And ideologies represented as countries fighting each other. But that's just the dynamic of humanity. I guess we need that diversity of thought and diversity of ideologies.
Yeah.
Even though things might clash against each other. Like all the countries in the world that are fighting each other, I guess they're like the top teeth and the bottom teeth. They're in the same body of humanity, but they're just always grinding it against each other.
Absolutely.
So that's funny.
Yeah. Yeah.
This idea of like picking the path that's best for you. Like I had this idea when I was way back about like, how do you optimize your life? So I was thinking, imagine a circle and you're just in the middle.
Yeah.
Like you're stuck in the circular forest. How do you get out? Like it's a waste of time to think which direction to go instead of just picking a direction and keep going there.
Yes. Yeah.
And then you might swerve left, right a bit, but the general combination of the vectors is like pointing out.
Out.
You keep going inside, you're not progressing, you're digressing.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, that's a good analogy. Like that's a good.
Like, what's the path of highest leverage?
Yeah, just question and go for it. Yeah, I guess that's also how I live my life.
That's my personal philosophy. I'm glad we are on the same page.
Exactly.
Yo, it's been so fun to talk to you. I think you have a lot of cool ideas. Anything you want to leave behind before we wrap this up? Maybe the book. What's it called?
Oh yeah, brief answers and good questions. Yeah, she's. So I actually just. Push up your brains, or so get that book, read that book. It feels like I'm an
advocate that book, but not just it's a very, also a very beautiful book.